open a public hearing on 2853. Janet, would you
get out of my glasses?
Give us a rundown.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. House Bill 2853 would allow transportation districts to limit the terms of certain members that are next elected to their boards in order to stagger future election of members. It would then repeal that authority on June 30th of 2005. In 1997, when the Tillamook County Transportation District was formed, under Oregon law, all board members were elected to four-year terms. Because the original terms were not varied, all seven board positions come up for election at the same time. The statute doesn't provide for taking care of the problem retroactively because they've already checked about doing that. So House Bill 2053 was necessary to allow the district at the next election to elect new board members to shorter terms. Then this would mean at future elections only a portion of the board would come up for election at any particular election. There, we are waiting for Dash 1 amendments. My staff member summary talks about the Dash 1 amendments that would allow the limiting of terms of three of the members to 3 years instead of two years, and that would be a change on the last line of the bill, line 12 of the bill, where it says a term of 2 years. The amendment is to say a term of three years at the request of the district. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Janet. Roger Martin.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, my name is Roger Martin. I'm the executive director of the Oregon Transit Association. Heather Ornelius, up at the top, who requests the bill, is the general manager of Tillamook Transportation District. Representative Hobson's can't be here. She's in the Revenue Committee, but she, Debbie Boone, is here from her staff. I think the bill's been totally explained by Janet Adkins. I don't need to add much more. When this district was established, and I would attribute a little malice aforethought, the county clerk was not very enthusiastic about the district, so she set, and she's no longer county clerk, she set the election of all the board of directors for the same time. Those of you who serve on any kind of board know it helps a little to have somebody around who's had a little experience, and that's all we're trying to achieve is stagger. The entire board is in favor of this. They've got volunteers to serve the three-year term instead of the four-year term. I don't know of any opposition. I sure appreciate your passing it with that amendment that Janet mentioned.
Thank you, Roger. Any questions? Representative Beyer.
Thank you, Chair. Will this affect anybody else, or is everybody else following this procedure?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Beyer, to the best of our knowledge, all the other transportation districts, and there are about eight of them in the state, have staggered terms. This one is just unique, and we're just trying to put it in sync with the other ones.
Thank you.
Any other questions? Looks like that's it, Roger. Any other? Anyone else wants to testify on 2853? We'll close the public hearing on House Bill 2853, and we'll await the arrival of the amendments and then go to work session. Okay. We're going to go a little out of order and open a hearing on House Bill 2997. And Cliff Olson.
Chair Brown, members of the committee, my name is Cliff Olson. I work for Martin Nelson Oil Products here in Salem, and I'm representing the Oregon Petroleum Marketers Association before you today.
Just 1 minute. I got up myself out of order. I'll have Janet explain what the bill is. And I've got a good vice chair that's
reminding
me. I got
you.
People on both sides.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. House Bill 2997 would exempt the sellers of fuel at cardlock facilities from having to collect the state diesel tax at the pump, as long as it's collected when the seller collects the fuel purchase price from the buyer. It takes effect the 91st day after the end of this legislative session, and you should have at your place a dash 2 amendment, which exempts the seller of the diesel fuel from having to collect the diesel tax from persons who are certified as exempt from paying the tax. So it was a necessary amendment to, if a use is not taxable, off-road use or farm use, the cardlock dealer would not have to collect the tax from the person for that use. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Janet. Okay, Cliff. Apologize for.
Thank you. Basically, what we came before you on this was to fix something that has recently come up but has been our practice for many years. Recently, the Attorney General, in an opinion, stated that according to the statute, the tax had to be collected at the time of delivery unless there was a permit on the vehicle or PUC plates, whatever the case may be. Of course, since our sites are unattended, that's basically not a possibility. And we had an opinion when Cardlock was established that that was not necessary, that it could be collected. Actually, it didn't really specify it was to be collected. The industry has made it a practice to get certification or some type of information from the operator when we issue the cards, and then the tax is collected when we actually bill them. So this this bill would mirror that practice and correct the problems that we have with the current statute. What it does is defines the seller as the person who owns the account, which would be the person that issues the card for the site, and that's actually where the collection could be, because that's the person who knows whether they should be tax exempt or not tax exempt. So we are just kind of moving this or correcting this issue as to current practice, and we've worked with ODOT on this, and they've supported us in this, and we've come to a program that works for both of us to get the job done of collecting taxes and gives us what we need to operate our businesses.
Thank you, Cliff. Paul?
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, I'm Paul Romaine, here representing the Oregon Petroleum Marketers Association. Cliff did an able job of explaining the bill. All you're doing here is codifying what has been done since Cardlock began. It's what everybody thought the law stated. In fact, there was an earlier letter basically saying this is the way you do it. The problem was that when the Attorney General reviewed the law, they said, no, this isn't how the law says you're supposed to do it. So, again, to compliment ODOT, they came to us and said, you know, we got a problem here. We need to change the law to make sure we conform to existing practice today. And they worked with us instead of just sort of coming to us and saying, you had to do it this other way. They basically are saying, let's work with you. We'll bring you the law. We'll get it done. So, again, my compliments to ODOT. Thank you.
Any questions, Clinton?
Mr. Chair.
Representative Greenwood.
Can I ask Jan a question?
Certainly.
Before I ask this, I'm a little confused. I thought we were told in an earlier discussion of this whole issue that the fuel taxes were collected when the fuel went into the ground. Or maybe yes. I can ask, rather than when they were sold at the pump.
Mr. Chair, but you still pay, when you drive up to a gasoline pump, you pay your 24-cent tax, or a truck does pay its 24-cent diesel tax at the pump also, and they have to have a way to collect from you. And they don't collect from you at the pump. You don't hand the money at the pump.
So it's statutorily required both that the tax is paid to the state when it goes into the ground, and then the statute also defines when somebody can, when the seller can collect the tax from the customer.
Right, and it's
okay. And I understand
at the pump.
Okay. I think Department of Transportation, when they come up, will be able to answer that too. Some of those questions.
Mr. Chair, we're a little nervous about this order because we usually let ODOT come up and mess it up, and then we clean it up after. We're a little nervous about going out of order. This is an experiment to see whether we ever do this again.
Representative
yeah,
Donner.
Mr. Chair, I have to declare a conflict. Mr. Romaine's lovely daughter delivered two bottles of wine to my office this morning, and it wasn't regarding this bill. It was my racquetball tournament for the representatives and their aides that we're having next week as prizes. So I wanted to declare that those two bottles of wine are used for that purpose, and I do appreciate it, Paul. And the winners, whoever they'll enjoy it too. Thank you.
So noted.
Yes, they are. Come and check them.
Any other questions? Thank you, gentlemen.
Thank you.
Could we have Dave Tyler and Quentin Hess, please? Good morning.
Good morning, Chair Brown, members of the committee. For the record, Dave Tyler, Chief Financial Officer for ODOT. Your committee administrator did a wonderful job. Industry did a great job. We support the amendments and very much appreciate your approval of the bill. They've been wonderful to work with through this process. We've had great communications and be happy to respond to questions.
Representative Greenluck, did you get your question answered?
Yeah, I think I did. My constituents are always writing me emails about how we waste time with things that seem odd, and this is pretty odd to me. No, my questions are fine. Thank you.
Okay.
I didn't realize the statute applied in two places.
Okay, thank you. Any other questions? Jim?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I have a question regarding, are most of the people that are exempt or can show that they're exempt, are they truckers or are they farmers using off-road use, or are they truckers that don't have to pay the diesel tax because they pay the weight mile tax?
Chairman Brown, Administrator Janet,
mm-hmm.
Most the largest group of taxpayers is actually the truckers that have the ODOT certificate that indicates that they're paying the weight mile tax instead mm-hmm. of the fuel tax. We have about 1,500 other persons licensed with us, farmers, loggers, construction companies that use diesel and for various reasons pay the tax directly to ODOT rather than at the pump. And we issue them an emblem that they display that tells the seller not to collect the tax.
My experience at the key lock is that the operators of the key lock system also, I have a key lock card and have a diesel pickup that I use over the road. But that won't open up that other pump for me. So
good.
they have a way of electronically locking you out of there.
Have you tried?
I won't tell you how. I don't know.
My mini bar is
not working. I think I'm losing control of this meeting. Thank you, gentlemen.
Thank you.
Bob Russell, please.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. My name is Bob Russell. I'm president of the Oregon Trucking Associations, and as you know by now, this is a significant issue to my members. We burn a lot of diesel. We buy a lot of diesel from card locks, and we do not pay diesel fuel taxes because we pay the weight mile tax. So this would be a significant burden on us if you do not pass this bill, because we will have to request refunds for all of the diesel fuel taxes that we pay, and it would be a meaningless expense, I believe, to both government and to industry. So we strongly support the bill, and I also want to take this opportunity to compliment the department. They've done a fantastic job working with us. I really appreciate the spirit of cooperation. That's all I have to say. I'd be happy to answer
your questions. First of all, any questions? Don't look like any. Thank you. Is there anyone else here to testify on House Bill 2997? The and then we'll close the public hearing on 2997 and open a work session on 2997.
Mr. Chair, I would move the -2 amendments to House Bill 2997.
Representative Beyer moves the -2 amendments to 2997. Is there any discussion? Hearing none, is there any objection? they're adopted for the motions.
Mr. Chair, I move the House Bill 2997 as amended to the floor with the due pass recommendation.
Representative Beyer moves House Bill 2997 as amended to the floor with the due pass recommendation. Is there any discussion? Hearing none, Brian, will you call the roll, please?
Representative Gilman.
Yes.
Representative Greenleg.
Aye.
Representative Mabry.
Aye.
Representative Zahner.
Aye.
Representative Beyer.
Aye.
Representative Dingfelder.
Aye.
Chair Brown.
Aye. Motion carries. Can we put this on the consent calendar?
Chair, I'd make a motion we put it on the consent calendar if we need one.
Representative Zahner moves that we place this House Bill 2997 as amended on the consent calendar. Is there any objection?
I was just hoping you're going to make Greenlit carry it, but
I'll be very good. So done. Placed on the consent calendar. Okay, now we're at 2747. We'll open a public hearing on House Bill 2747. Janet, can you give us a rundown on the bill, please?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. House Bill 2747 would disconnect Oregon income and corporate excise taxes from federal law that permits an accelerated depreciation of certain motor vehicles. It would begin to apply in tax year 2004. The Federal Revenue Code, and at your place today are several articles about this tax, both tax credit and accelerated depreciation, several articles, and then also are two sections of federal statute that are at your place that I think are the two that cover what this exemption does. Federal code allows accelerated depreciation for certain vehicles over 6,000 pounds used for business purposes. The accelerated depreciation was added to the code over 20 years ago, and at that time, eligible vehicles were mostly industrial vehicles, including light trucks and vans. Heavier SUVs and now Hummers currently fit the category and are eligible for the tax benefit. The code offers an investment tax credit available in the first year and then a five-year full depreciation of the vehicle. It's my understanding that the credit is now at $24,000, that first-year credit, an amount that it has increased in phases from $17,500 in 1996. The schedule of increases was part of a congressional effort to further encourage business investment. The benefit was partially aimed at farmers and construction companies, so their work pickups would not be treated as luxury vehicles, for which there's a luxury tax was a luxury tax surcharge and for which there is a restricted tax credit and depreciation benefit. The definition is based on weight and not on function of the vehicle, and that's the reason that the SUVs came in, and it's just certain models of SUVs. I think some of the articles, and I can't verify this, but some of the articles have a list of the types of SUVs that qualify for this accelerated depreciation. So the bill would disconnect Oregon tax law from this provision of the federal code and would only allow the vehicles to be depreciated for Oregon tax purposes at the rate allowed for passenger vehicles that are used for business. So that's what I have, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Janet. Could have Senator Ringo, please.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, good morning. For the record, I'm Charlie Ringo, state senator from Northwest Portland and Beaverton. It looks to me like you have more fun in your committees than we do over on the Senate side. Maybe it's just because it's Friday morning. I don't know.
Because you left.
Because I left. Thanks, Mitch. Thank you very much for hearing the bill. House Bill 2747 has at least three good features to it, and I've outlined them in a letter. One, it's good for the environment. Two, it would save our state money. And three, it would at least in a small way help our national security by reducing our dependence on foreign oil. And I guess I'd like to give a little more background as to where this comes from. And your committee administrator did give a good summary. But, you know, our federal tax code is crafted to allow businesses, and a lot of them are for contractors and people who work in the farming community, to take an accelerated depreciation for their vehicles. And it was originally crafted for light trucks, and you can imagine why. They need those kind of vehicles around the farm, around construction sites. But it's based on weight, and that's why it includes SUVs. Well, it's created a tax loophole because anybody who's self-employed can buy a vehicle above 6,000 pounds and use this tax loophole. And that's why city folks like me, I mean, self-employed attorneys, accountants, real estate agents, say, great, gee, I think I'll buy an SUV and I'll write the whole thing off. And so it's not accomplishing the purpose of the tax break, yet we're encouraging people to buy heavier vehicles. And it really is a lose-lose situation. And the thing that has made this even a little worse is that President Bush's latest economic stimulus proposal proposes increasing the tax break for SUVs from a $25,000 figure to $75,000 figure. And that's why now people can go buy the very heaviest SUVs. Should his tax proposal go through, the $70,000 Lincoln Navigators that they're the size of a small house, and they'll get to write those things off their business. And we've enclosed some articles off the internet that you'll find pretty interesting. Here, this is an example of a guy, Carl Wazinski, a healthcare consultant, who bought a $47,000 Ford Excursion. I mean, he's a healthcare consultant. He bought the $47,000 Ford Excursion, and he wrote off $32,000 of that from his taxes. And, you know, this isn't right. And so is what this – obviously we can't impact the federal tax code, but we can say that we in Oregon are not going to go along with this. And that's what this bill is intended to do. And it's interesting that the New York governor, Republican George Pataki, has introduced a similar bill in New York for the exact same reason. And the quote from his office, this is his quote, "It's an issue of fairness and good environmental policy. It's closing a tax loophole that's been abused." And really, that's what this bill is about. So when I say there's three benefits, the first one is it's good for the environment. I want to touch on that just a little bit. You know, air pollution is unsightly. Nobody likes it. But it's a huge health factor. And according to the American Lung Association, 60,000 Americans die every year because of airborne particulates, because of diseases related to airborne particulates. Millions of kids go to the hospital every year for asthmas related to airborne particulates. So, you know, this bill, it's not going to solve that, but at least is a step in the right direction in helping the environment. Saving the state money, according to the Legislative Revenue Office, this would bring in $1.6 million in the 2003-05 budget, $3.3 million for the biennium after that. And as you know, $1 million here and $1 million there is very important. Finally, national security. You know, there's a New York Times columnist, Thomas Friedman, that I think some of you probably read now and then, who is no bleeding heart liberal, but he writes very insightful columns about the Middle East and about world affairs. And he wrote a column in January, and I was going to bring it with me, and I didn't. But his column said, you know, okay, maybe we're going to go to a war in Iraq, and maybe part of the reason is oil. Let's just be upfront about that. He said, it's okay by me if we go to war for oil. It is a national security issue. But if we're going to be doing that, let's do better to reduce our consumption at home and reduce the use of SUVs. And I think it is an important statement. If one of the reasons that we're about to go to war is oil, and it probably is a factor, let's do what we can to reduce our consumption of oil here at home. So I think this bill is a win-win-win. I just had a conversation to talk to Don Schellenberg of Farm Bureau, and he mentioned his concern how this will impact farmers and their ability to write off legitimate business expenses for farms. And it's not my intention to address that, and so it just occurs to me that maybe we can tailor the bill a little more narrowly so that it doesn't impact farming vehicles. But I really appreciate your consideration of this bill and would be happy to answer any questions.
Thank you, Senator. I know in my business we have use light trucks, pickups for service vehicles, and some of them are four-wheel drives. They're actually the SUV.
Mm-hmm.
And we have them because it's necessary to get in certain areas where we go to do the service work. You wouldn't get there if you didn't have the four-wheel drive capability.
Right. That's right.
Yeah.
No, and I think that's one of the challenges is you can certainly see why for some businesses it's a crucial piece of equipment, and you've got to have it. Right now you can write off up to $25,000. That would probably get you most of where you want to go unless you're out buying, you know, $50,000 SUVs. But I appreciate that purpose, and it's not my intention to pass something that's inconsistent with that.
Understand. Other questions? Representative Gilman.
Well, Mr. Chair, I just wanted to add a few comments since I'm a co-sponsor of this bill, and Senator Ringo did an excellent job at bringing up the key points that I would have brought up. And I wanted to reiterate that the intent was not to take this tax break away, you know, tax credit away from the farming industry or legitimate businesses. So I totally agree with the senator. If there's some way we can craft this to avoid that from happening, then I just wanted to let you know that. The other thing is I couldn't help but share this as Senator Ringo was testifying. That, you know, I just thought this is a loophole you can drive a Hummer through. And I just thought we can coin a new phrase right here. I didn't want to insult the trucking industry, but, I mean, I think that there's been an abuse of a legitimate tax break. And I do think, like New York, we can show some leadership and say that would be a huge impact potentially on our budget. And given the dire financial straits that we're in, I think we can take some proactive steps here to avoid more losses from our schools and essential services. So, thank you, Good. Senator.
Representative Zahner.
Senator Ringo. Yeah. Give respect, he kicks my fanny and racket. But anyway, I have a son-in-law that's a hop grower, and they have two or three of these rigs, so that is... I have the same concern that Don has.
Right.
Is there any statistics that say whether they'll stop buying these vehicles?
Well, I think for a lot of people, the tax incentive is just the added little extra thing that causes them to make a decision. There is, in one of these, a quote where somebody said, you know, I didn't need a vehicle this big. This is one-third bigger than I really needed. But, heck, I got the $32,000 tax break. So I think people are making decisions for the tax break otherwise they wouldn't make the purchases.
Thank you, Senator.
Representative Mabry.
Just a question, Senator. Did I understand then from your comments that maybe you would want to hold this bill up a little bit and do some manicuring?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, I would very much want to address the concerns of Representative Zahner and the Farm Bureau, and I don't know that there's any way to address every concern, but I think probably making an exception for farming vehicles is reasonable, and it's easy to do. You know, the other comment that I think Mr. Schellenberg is about to tell you, and so I'll just beat him to the punch, is that sorry about that. Is that it's you are increasing the accounting burden a little bit when you disconnect from the federal tax code, because now you've got to keep track of things under a federal depreciated schedule and a state depreciated schedule, and so it is a little more work. Frankly, I think accountants are paid to do that, and that's not a reason not to pursue the bill, but it's an issue. So,
Representative Green,
Charlie, excuse me.
You did it too.
Senator Ringo is my senator, so I need to be respectful of him. And I appreciate him representing me so well. There is a bill floating around out of revenue or somewhere that would generally disconnect the state from the federal tax code. If that passes, does that take care of this problem?
You know, that is a good question, and I think it does. But I don't think that I don't have optimism that's going to pass. Originally, there were expectations that bill would pass quickly out of the House, and my understanding is it's currently bogged down.
Committee, this does have a subsequent referral to the Revenue Committee. So.
Yeah.
Any other questions of the Senator?
Thank you very much.
Thank you, Senator. Don Schollenberg.
Morning, Chair Brown, members of the committee. Don Schoenberg, representing Oregon Farm Bureau. I'd like to thank Senator Ringo for his eloquent testimony this morning, as well as the rest of you. I don't know that I have any more I can add. all the points have been made that I was going to touch on. We'd be happy to work with Senator Ringo, see what we can figure out so that the agriculture community isn't adversely affected. Looking at the bill, in Section 2, Subsection 1, it says the federal taxable income shall be modified if, and then it lists paragraph A, if it's a four-wheeled vehicle, and then you go to B, and it says is a truck or van and is rated at 6,000 pounds gross vehicle weight or more. That would include every kind of truck, all our grain trucks, any kind of truck you use, including the pickup truck. So, you know, this seems to be very far-reaching, so I would just call your attention to that language as well. And would conclude my testimony and be happy to answer any questions that I can.
Thank you, Don. Is there any question? Our committee administrator pointed out that this clarifies the question she had in her mind as to why. Now she understands why all the farmers are driving Lincoln Navigators.
And all the representatives of the farm
are driving Volkswagens. Oh,
oh well. Thank you.
thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Committee, we have Deborah Buchanan here from the Department of Revenue. If there's any questions you might have of her, I'm sure she'd be glad to come forward and answer.
I do have a question.
Deborah, please.
Good morning, Mr. Chair.
Good morning.
Members of the committee, Deborah Buchanan, Department of Revenue.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Representative Ingalls.
I just in regards to the conversation we just had, do you currently track the type of vehicles, or does DMV, is there any way to track the type of vehicles that are currently getting the tax credit as to what kind of use they are? I guess that would be helpful when we're thinking about trying to craft some language for an amendment to this bill.
Mr. Chair, Representative Dingfelder, we don't actually track the usage of the vehicle. When a company or an individual files the tax return and they're reporting some business income or expense, they do indicate on the federal return what type of business they operate. Generally, they're supposed to. Some don't. But there are codes, and they enter the codes on the Schedule C, for example. But the Department of Revenue doesn't actually track the type of use.
A follow-up, Mr. Chair. So we could get those codes, the breakdown of the codes, though, for people who are claiming, and just to get a sense of what categories businesses are claiming would be helpful.
Mr. Chair, Representative Dingfelder, our research unit might be able to provide some information on that for you. I wouldn't want to commit them to it, though, but I can try to get you that information. Another approach might be to look at who's filing a Schedule F if you want to file, limit this to farm vehicles. If you're not looking any broader than that, they file a separate schedule than other businesses do. So there might be a way to direct it to farming equipment. And there could be some other directions to go as well, if you'd like.
Okay. Thank you. I think we'll be asking for your help with some of these amendments.
Representative Greenwood?
Yeah, I'm a little curious about this general kind of legislation. My expectation would be that you don't look much into the heart of a federal tax return, but use the bottom line of the federal tax return for the Oregon tax, and whatever goes on in there just goes on. So this would require, if we were to implement this, another line on the Oregon tax form, similar to, say, the $100 political credit or something, another line that would subtract from the bottom line of net taxable income on the federal line something that came from somewhere in the form. So it would say, go to that line, subtract this from that number, is that, or add this to that number.
Mr. Chair, Representative Greenlick, for individuals that would be the case, probably what we would do is an individual in preparing their Oregon return picks up adjusted gross income from the federal return, and that number includes any depreciation expense they've claimed. So the number you're talking about here is reflected there. They bring that to the Oregon return, and then most likely what we would do, because of the limited number of people affected, we would, in the instructions, tell them to recalculate the expense for Oregon and have it an other addition. So we wouldn't actually have to add a line. It would be included in whatever number they come up with there. Now, corporations would probably be different. We probably would have a separate line for corporations. And Mr. Chair, if I might address the question you had earlier about the disconnect. If the legislature adopted a disconnect proposal, it means you're tying to the law that was in effect on December 31, 2002. So whatever rules are currently in place would continue to apply. So they would still have the accelerated depreciation and so forth. It would not pick up changes that are in the president's proposal, and that would go to $75,000 expense. That would not be reflected. Now, there is an amendment being considered that would keep a conformity to the depreciation rules, in which case the $75,000, if it were passed, would be effective for Oregon. So there are several different things that come into play in that discussion of the disconnect and the reconnect and so on.
Yeah, follow up on that?
Follow up.
So the proposal that we'll get, if we get a proposal, comes out of whichever committee, is it a total disconnect from the federal tax code? It's a disconnect from future changes in the federal tax code. Is that right?
Mr. Chair, Representative Greenlick, there are actually two different proposals. One is to totally disconnect, which means you are tying to federal law as it was in effect on December 31, 2002. Any future changes, you would have to come back and vote on to enact those for Oregon. There is a proposal, an amendment, that would not disconnect from depreciation rules. So if the president's budget plan or tax relief plan is adopted as he proposed it, which is increasing this expense to $75,000, and if you approve the amendment to continue a connection to depreciation, you would pick up that additional $75,000 expense.
Jenna?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Deborah, most of the articles have talked about pickups and SUVs. They haven't talked about heavier trucks, but I can't see. It just has the over 6,000. Are these just for passenger vehicles? Why aren't heavier trucks like the other farm trucks talked about? Are they eligible, do you think? Yeah. Or
Mr. Chair, Ms. Adkins, you're asking whether the heavier farm vehicles are eligible for the accelerated depreciation?
Right.
I don't know. I would have to check on that. They may come under some other provision. I noticed the bill talks about four-wheeled vehicles. So when I think of a grain truck having an axle, but actually two wheels, mm-hmm. generally,
maybe
someone will correct me on this. Representative's honor. I can't remember how many wheels there were on the truck when I drove it years ago. But
At least six.
Thank you. So those would be outside of this category. So a grain truck would not be limited here by this bill. And I cannot recall whether they qualify for the accelerated expensing.
That would be one thing. Might be the distinction then that just brings in mostly pickups.
And those grain trucks wouldn't be four-wheel anyway. They have extra wheels, but they wouldn't have any wheel drive.
Is there any other questions for Deborah? Thank you, Deborah. Is there anyone else in the audience here to testify on 2747? Seeing none. My concern with this bill is that if I take the ability of my dentist to write off his four-wheel drive Suburban away, Is that going to be reflected in the price of my bill the next time?
Of course. We're going to declare a conflict here.
We'll close the public hearing on House Bill 2747. Is there anyone here to testify on House Bill 3138? Yes, we have one over there. Okay, we'll open a public hearing on House Bill 3138. And Janet, can you tell us about the bill?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. This was one of the bills that we worked on at the last meeting about creating specialty license plates. This was the bill that would establish an emergency medical services license plate. And one of the proponents of the bill was not able to come to that meeting, and so he's here today. And so I think you understand mostly about that. This is would be a special background plate as it's written, not just a logo or wording on a group plate. There you go. So thank you, Mr. Chair.
Sir, for the record, do you identify yourself and give us your address?
For the record, my name is Victor Hoffer, H-O-F-F as in Frank, E-R. My address is 510 West Church Street in Marion County, Mount Angel, Oregon. And I serve as a paramedic, and I don't represent anybody except for myself, unfortunately. Mr. Chairman and members of the committee, I first want to thank you for this opportunity to be with you today. I apologize. I work for a living, as all of you do, off session, and I had a mandatory meeting. I had to have a job tomorrow or come to your committee. I chose to have a job. However, I do want to sincerely apologize for being a novice, or maybe not even a novice, maybe an amateur. Maybe not an amateur, maybe not even a beginner in this process. I have learned way more than I ever have wanted to know about the legislative process. The next time someone asks me to run for a political office, I will tell them no, because I have learned more than I've wanted to. But I do want to first and foremost apologize for taking the committee's time, because I am new at this and I have not done a very good job, and I admit that. And if humble pie is to be eaten, I so do so right now.
You're doing great. Doing great.
My intent for the historical background, my intent was to do two things. First, to allow volunteer EMTs, first responders, and those people who serve the community of Oregon to show their pride when they get up at 2 in the morning and nobody else cares, to help a sick or injured person by having a plate that would demonstrate that they are part of a big community of public servants, though most of them are unpaid and unvolunteer. A nationally recognized symbol that is technically owned by the National Highway Traffic Safety Administration called the Star of Life, which you all are probably familiar with, is seen on many ambulances and sometimes fire apparatus, demonstrates a first responder type organization. This is a public domain seal. However, it is controlled by National Highway Traffic Safety Administration. The purpose is you don't want the rug doctor driving his van or SUV down the road with a Star of Life on it and making a misinterpretation of a person who a vehicle that goes out and responds to emergencies. Therefore, because this is so well recognized and is controlled by the federal government, we thought this would be a wonderful idea. I have polled many people across the state of Oregon, mostly volunteers, and the volunteers just jumped for joy. I get to let people know that I'm stupid enough and crazy enough to get out of bed at 3 in the morning to get Grandma off the floor and put her back into bed. Well, that was a great idea. The second part of this great idea from an inexperienced legislative person like myself was to give the money to someone who could use the money. And that was the health department, it's called something today, which is probably different than it will be called tomorrow.
I hope so.
But the Emergency Medical Services has two very important things that it does for the EMTs of Oregon. First of all, they have something called the Mobile Training Unit. The Mobile Training Unit, by definition, is mobile. It goes to mostly rural Oregon and provides educational opportunities that are otherwise not available to rural Oregonians, rural first responders. I work in the metropolitan area. I have to have 72 hours of education every 2 years, continuing. I have about 200 hours, at least. Well, it's very available. But out in the rural areas, it is not. The mobile training unit has great difficulties in general during fat budgetary years. And I would suspect that this is a lean budgetary year at best.
Didn't have any trouble learning that, did he?
So I thought this would be great to have some money go to them. The other item is the Emergency Medical Services for Children. This is a program that the state operates on a local level as opposed to the national level, having a conference once a year. It brings people together to remember that children need special attention when we're called. And there's a national focus on pediatric care. And the state of Oregon is smart enough to provide that to local people. My intent was to have this license plate do two things. Allow people to show their community service and pride. And two, in a small way, help fund the state programs, particularly for rural Oregonians. The end result would be better medical care for all of your constituents. However, as I said in my opening, I have learned more than I've wanted to about the legislative process. And this bill is full of bullet holes, which may be able to be reconciled, and maybe they won't be. I have taken care of numerous people with bullet holes. I can tell you it's much easier taking care of people bleeding all over the place than trying to save this bill. I must say that Senator Ringo has given me very small solace today when he has to tweak his bill a little bit too. However, mine is not a little bit. Mine is like gigantic. I want to thank you for taking the time to hear me today. And I would like to work with the wonderful people from Representative Zahner's office to see if we can make this bill more palatable and workable. If not, I know that many bills die, and I do even have patients who I cannot always save. So I must admit that if that is the course of this bill, then I can accept that. But if any of you ever suggest I should run in my local area for a political office, you must remind me of this day. Finally, I'd like to again thank you, Chairman Brown, and the committee for taking the time to allow a novice to come before you today. And I sincerely apologize for the errors in my ways, and certainly I will be a better politician. Oops, ouch, that hurt. A better citizen in the future. And thank you so much for your time. I do have some demonstrations of what this would have looked like otherwise. Very simple. Again, thank you for your time.
Thank you for your testimony. Committee, any questions? Yeah. Representative Greenland.
First of all, I'd like to comment on Mr. Hoffer's Uriah Heep imitation here. I also know, besides being an EMT, he's an attorney and was my son's classmate in law school and also was a Republican candidate for statewide office, so I think he's not quite as much of a novice as we like. Victor, I'd like to ask you a question, and it is too bad you weren't here yesterday, but I think keeping your job was a good choice. Because we got into a whole set of license plates yesterday, and one of the things that we were oriented with is that there are two different kinds of special license plates. One is a
whole different plate, like the salmon and the Crater Lake, and we're starting to proliferate a variety of those. But there's another plate that nonprofit organizations can get really quite easily without a bill. And there are about 20 of those, including you've seen them with a beaver fan and those sort of things. Is there a nonprofit organization representing EMTs that might be able to apply for that bill that would say, you know, be grateful for our emergency workers or something on it? And, I mean, it's much less expensive to set up. It can be done without any bill at all. Would you consider whether something like that might work to serve the need you perceive of honoring a particularly volunteer emergency medical type?
Chairman Brown and Representative Greenleaf, thank you for those kind words about your son. He is much younger than I am, so I started late in life to go to law school. First, the reason we have a bill is because we do not have a state organization. And that is why we went to LC to ask them to put a bill together. That is the purpose of having a bill, because there is no nonprofit. The biggest nonprofit in Oregon that I can think of at this moment in time in history is the state of Oregon. So I would hope that I would have thought it might apply.
We're not a nonprofit. We're losing.
Right. The answer to your question, however, is this. One, there is not a nonprofit 501c3. However, there are probably 501c3s who would cooperate in this venture. If we do not want to put the nationally recognized emblem, the photograph, this emblem Star of Life on a license plate, an alternative would be to put the words Star of Life. And that would maybe even create more energy in the community when at the gas station the attendant would say, "What does Star of Life mean? I'm a volunteer. I get up at 3 in the morning like most crazy people don't and go out." So there is an opportunity, I believe, to take this back. And Nicole, with Representative Zahner's office, has been more than courteous and has gone more than out of her way and provided expertise and support. And possibly we could find a nonprofit 501c3 that would represent this cause. However, I still believe that the mobile training unit is the place where this money should go, because rural Oregonians who volunteer deserve to have some education. And as far as an emblem, the word Star of Life, I believe, could suffice. Now, it's that close. Sometimes I'm an attorney, so that does not really answer questions sometimes. Well, does that get close?
That's exactly right, and I'd be happy to join with Representative Zahner's office to see if we can help work that through.
Thank you, Representative Greenlock.
Thank you. Is there any other questions? Thank you again, sir, for coming.
Thank you, members of the committee. Just supposed to pat that out.
We'll close the public hearing on health bill.
If any of you are at the Rose Garden and need help, he's usually there to help you in his emergency room.
Thank you. We'll close the public hearing on House Bill 3138, and we'll carry. We haven't got the amendments yet on House Bill 2853, so we'll carry that over to Monday to send it to work session. Wednesday? Okay. Janet says Wednesday. Is there anything else for the committee? If not, we are adjourned.